You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 123 of the CD Baby DIY Musician podcast. My name is Kevin, and joining me for this roundtable edition is Chris and The Bolt. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hello,
How's it going?
Doing great. Good.
Chris, you sent me over a lovely track that you recorded for your next album. You played it for me yesterday, and I was very impressed. It's sounding great.
Oh, thank you. It's a very positive, upbeat number.
It is. It had some nice sounds. Maybe a little country. Maybe a little Hawaiian. What were you calling it? Hawaiian country.
Yeah, so, I don't know, something like that.
But it was nice.
Where are you in the recording process?
So it's mixed now. The album is mixed, not mastered, and I'm wondering if I should shop it around to labels now or just put it out myself.
Shop it around to labels? What kind of?
Am I gonna have to have a little employment discussion with you?
Every podcast needs a hypocrite.
That's right.
This is the DIY musician podcast, yeah. Not the get signed to a big major label podcast.
Let the boy have his dreams.
When my dreams are shattered 6 months from now, I'm just going to put it out on CD Baby anyways. So.
Oh, just... You're going to
just put it out on CD
when
Baby.
Your dreams. Oh, man. We're really going to have some talks. Speaking of CD Baby, a couple episodes back, we had an episode about CD Baby Pro, our new publishing administration service that we're very excited about. It was a very in-depth interview. Justin was great. I thought I knew something about publishing, and I've had the chance to hang out with him a few times, and I'm like, no, this dude knows music publishing. And so we're really excited to have them helping us facilitate that. There's been so many questions about that, and so we wanted to do an episode of the podcast that's geared around music publishing, what ASCAP BMI do, what is this whole mechanical royalties that I haven't been getting, both in the US and abroad. So if you have a question related to CD Baby Pro, we're going to do a CD Baby Pro questions episode in the future, like I said, and I want to get your questions so we can answer them on the podcast. So we have a listener line, 360-524-2209. You can call that, leave your question, we'll play it on the show, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. Plus, I know many artists have been contacting CD Baby with questions, so we're going to incorporate a lot of those as well. But I just wanted to let people know about that at the top of the episodes. We want your involvement. We want to hear from you and let this be a resource for you to understand the confusing world of music publishing. Because I can talk music publishing pretty decent, but man, when we've talked through all the scenarios that exist in pretty much the world about how money is collected, it just blows my mind. And so we want to help you understand. That's why CD Baby Pro is created, because it's a mind-numbing process to even get that money. So we want to hear your questions. We'll answer them. Why don't we get into some news? Lots of great headlines. First off, some breaking news. At the World Creators Summit in Washington, D.C., the U.S. Register of Copyrights, Maria Palante, has confirmed that she is looking to provide a full public performance right for sound recordings. This would mean that sound recording owners and the featured artist on those recordings would also make a royalty when their recordings are played on terrestrial radio, something that is the norm in most foreign countries, but has only been available for streaming and satellite radio usage in the U.S. through Sound Exchange. With the major broadcast companies having a huge lobby in D.C., this will be an enormous fight, but a big win for U.S. artists if it actually becomes law. It seems like we went a while without much to report in the way of new music services launching, but that has definitely changed. Starting a couple weeks back when Twitter launched Twitter Music, a service that helps users discover the music that is being talked about the most on Twitter. The buzz about the new service seemed to come and go just like a tweet. Since the initial launch, they've added charts and deeper discovery tools that expand to more genres. Then there was the announcement by Google in which they introduced us to Google Play Music All Access, a new Spotify-like streaming service where for a monthly fee, users have unlimited access to the entire catalog of music available at Google Play. Of course, not to be outdone by Google, rumors are flying that in a matter of days, Apple will take the stage and announce its new iRadio service. Some are suggesting it will be a Pandora killer, which other rumors suggest it will be a Spotify killer, the difference being whether or not it's an interactive service like Spotify, where you select the songs you want to play, or a non-interactive service like Pandora, where songs would be served up using Apple's Genius technology. The big question is, are we officially moving into a streaming-only era? YouTube announced some amazing new stats about video viewership on their site. They now have 1 billion monthly visitors connecting 15% of the planet to video. Users are watching more than 6 billion hours of video each month. That's almost an hour a month of video watching every month for every person on the planet, which is a 50% jump over last year.
Oh, man.
Finally, my favorite news story so far this year. Rhapsody has announced that it's going to be adding liner notes to the albums available through their music service. Hopefully, this signals a change across all digital music services to start adding what has been the missing piece of the physical album experience. For those of you who have never purchased a physical album, which I'm sad to say there probably are some listening to this since that's the case. We're talking about production and recording credit, songwriting credit, info about who played on each track, basically all the info about who did what on the album. But the one question remains, how will they actually be getting all this information? Well, those were the news stories. Lots of big things happening.
Wow. Where do we start?
You know, on that last story, the funny thing is, Rhapsody's doing this... the album album liner notes, which is really cool, and kind of taking into account that Google and Apple are launching all these basically competitors to Rhapsody. Nowhere in any of the news lines do people say it's going to be a Rhapsody killer, which is kind of sad for Rhapsody. Well, but I'm glad to see them actually doing something unique that is much needed in the digital space.
Yeah, and I feel like Rhapsody has just sort of cruised at its popularity volume without being too disturbed by the major music services. I could be wrong, but...
Yeah, and they haven't... go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, I always feel bad when I hear about the lack of album credits in digital music. I always end up feeling really bad for engineers and producers who are probably the people that most benefited from that information being on there, because you could say, oh... Joe Schmo recorded this album. I want to work with him. So I know they've been complaining a lot about lost business, but then at the same time, they're losing business simply because people are recording at home and they're less necessary, sadly. But I don't know. I just feel really bad for them.
Well, it's been frustrating. It's been one of those things that I've been frustrated with, because I'll hear an album, whether it's an independent band where like a local artist where I'm trying to figure out, okay, where did they record this and who did they engineer? Because it sounds great. Or a major label release where I want to know the same information, or who wrote the songs, all that information, who's playing guitar on this track. And it's just been impossible to track down online. You would think with all the information available online that information would be somewhere, and it's not. It's crazy. I can go watch, apparently, videos of cats for the rest of my life and never run out, but I can't find out who recorded some of the biggest records on the planet right now.
Well, Apple Music Guide tried to corral a bunch of that information into a database, but it's still vastly incomplete.
Yeah, there's a website I can't remember off the top of my head that tried to do something similar, and it might have been an offshoot of All Music Guide, but I believe they wanted you to pay to have access to it. And they were trying to make more of a professional community. And I'm like, that is not what we need here. Just put this info on Wikipedia and we'll all be happy. That's all we need. But it will be interesting to see, where that information comes from, because none of the distributors are collecting that information and distributing it, whether it be us or anyone else. That's not information that iTunes is gathering. And if they were going to gather it, I mean, right now they get all their information from All Music Guide, so it would need to be in All Music Guide or another source they get it from. So it'll be interesting. It's just the first simple solution to what I think is a big problem. So
MP3s might be a dying technology anyways, but it would have been nice had they found a way to just include that in the metadata. So when you pull it up in your iTunes player, there's a little field that has all that stuff, who played the tracks.
And
we might be moving beyond all that.
Well, actually, you know, going back to the first story, they've specifically stated that it's time to start collecting a performance royalty for the sound recording rights holders. And if you're not familiar with Sound Exchange, we did an interview with someone from Sound Exchange a while back. You should definitely go listen to it. It's very detailed about how this works. In the U.S., we're pretty ignorant on this topic because it just hasn't been a right that has always gone along with the music. When a song plays, the songwriter and the publisher get played, but the person who's actually making that song famous by their performance of it gets nothing.
Right. You don't get paid if you're the bass player on the recording.
Or even the featured artist. You know, it's like, you know, there's lots of people that have recorded Bob Dylan songs or Beatles songs. And in the case of Bob Dylan, a lot of people have made his songs famous, more famous than his versions ever have been, but they got nothing of it. He made all the money off of it. So that's what Sound Exchange was set up to collect that for satellite and internet radio, because it was just the lobby was too big to tackle terrestrial radio. But looks like they're going to try and do it. And it'll be a lot of money for artists that they weren't already getting. But that being said, collecting on the sound recording, because they do collect, like you're mentioning, for who played on it, is it's going to be important to know who played on those tracks.
Right.
And
right.
That's information that's not necessarily readily available in the digital age, which still blows my mind.
I'm curious if the broadcast lobby will basically say, hey, wait a minute, after 60, 70, 80 years of this particular practice, we've formed our whole business on the assumption of these certain operating costs, and you can't just come in and double that particular cost. So why don't we take what we were paying and split it up amongst the publisher and the writer and the performers?
Well, that has already started. I mean, there's already been some legislation that they've tried to pass that would have some implications. I mean, if you read anything about Pandora lately, I mean, there's tons of information and arguments about that. But I even heard here in the Portland area, someone run an ad. It was during the election season, and I don't know if there was something specifically on the Oregon the ballots here in Oregon pertaining to performance rights or royalties that these guys pay, because I actually live in Washington, but all the media I get is from Portland, so a lot of election time I hear stuff that doesn't apply to what I can vote for. Just so you didn't think I was an uninformed voter on a key issue relating to music. But the local radio station was actually running ads saying, like calling it the Radio Freedom Act or something that was really painting it as, if you pass this law, all of the radio stations are going to go out of business. You won't have radio anymore. And, we're going to have to shut down from the unfair, fees that they're trying to make us pay. So it'll only get worse, but I think at some point it's just going to happen.
Hopefully so. And don't get swayed by those, your local radio stations saying that they're going to shut down, or even the national ones are going to shut down. They'll figure it out. They'll figure out a way.
They're all automated anyway. It's like one dude in a building in LA broadcasting to all these places.
I know.
Yeah. And they've got the ad revenue they can dip into and just take a little bit less profit 1 year.
Yeah.
Oh, Chris. All right. Well, let's move on to some discussion. We're already discussing, but I wanted to talk about, I'd love to hear some feedback from artists on this topic as we're discussing. So if you're listening and something, you know, strikes you that you want to weigh in on, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209. Or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. But what I wanted to talk about was, you know, some of the implications of, you know, iTunes is now apparently going to be launching a streaming service. Google has launched a streaming service. Spotify is, according to you, Chris, here to stay and not going anywhere because you're an avid Spotify user. And there's a lot of frustration in the artist community about, you know, is this the end of being able to sell music? Is this a bad thing for music? First off, I was going to just start off with a question. Do you guys think that these new services are actually going to change how people listen to music? And by that, I mean, you know, we've had Rhapsody here for a while. And, you know, like I mentioned, they've got a big user base, but they haven't been growing by leaps and bounds, similar to how Spotify has. And but, you know, now that we have the two big heavyweights, Google and Apple, in the mix, it seems like, you know, it's going to be the fight to the finish and see, you know, make streaming a part of music listening.
Right. Well, I think it's already changing. And I think that with Apple in the game, I mean, Apple has been the way that people listen to music for quite a while now. I mean, everyone, you know, uses iTunes, you know, half the planet has an iPhone. I think that, not really, but, you know.
Close enough.
I think that with iRadio especially, we're going to have a lot more people doing streaming. And I think that's okay. I think that in the beginning, I mean, we're still in the beginning of this change, and it's going to be confusing to artists on how they're going to make money. I think that artists will always be able to sell albums at shows because that's more about connecting with your audience and people taking home a piece of the experience that they had at a live concert. But I think more and more people will be accessing music through streaming.
I feel like the day is coming where there will be absolutely no reason to own music. I know right now for audiophiles, they would strongly disagree. But as things speed up, I feel like the quality will eventually be able to rise up to the speed that we deliver music now, and maybe they'll get CD quality files via streaming. I don't know how far away that is, but I feel like it's an inevitability right now.
Yeah, and to kind of bring everybody up to speed, just in case they think, what are these guys crazy? The people have been streaming music for a long time. Services like Rhapsody, Napster, and even Spotify have been around for a while, but none of those companies have owned the devices. And, you know, with the Android operating system, how Google, that's their deal, that basically the majority of smartphones that aren't Apple iOS are Android. And so these two companies can really integrate it in a way that makes it a user habit, a shift in way music listeners, you know, their habits, as opposed to, you know, what Rhapsody's been able to accomplish. Right. And that's where I think the real change is. I know Spotify, you can pay and get their app, and I know some people that love it, and even RDO. RDO is another service I should mention because they're actually gaining popularity. But none of those have had the access to the devices that users are addicted to, like the iPad or the iPhone.
Yeah, and you don't want to, you know, bog down your iPhone with a whole bunch of music when you can just have apps on there and listen to and stream music.
Yeah, exactly. And to me, I'm a holdout. I still prefer to at least buy an MP3 for a couple of reasons. One, the streaming quality starts to drive me crazy.
Yeah,
it doesn't bother me for music that I don't know, like if I'm just checking out bands that I'm not familiar with. It doesn't bother me as much, but when it's an album I know, it drives me nuts, the poor sound quality of streaming compared to having the full album.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, that still may be a ways off. I know that, you know, Google has Google Fiber, which is supposed to allow, you know, crazy speeds, but the companies like Comcast saying people don't actually want things that fast, you know, which is kind of laughable.
They are liars.
They are liars.
And they like to charge exorbitant amounts to get cable internet.
So there are companies sort of holding the reins like Comcast that are like, you know, we can basically just keep on charging incrementally more for faster speeds. And therefore, you know, people will just be like, you know what? I like high quality downloads. I like, I want to order, get FLAC or high-res MP3s and store them on my computer or store them in the cloud or whatever. But yeah, even if you're streaming them in the cloud, I suppose it's going to be lower quality than actually listening to them directly.
You know, the interesting thing with smartphones streaming music and, you know, in a lot of foreign countries, I should say developing nations, a lot of folks don't have internet access and they don't have computers, but they have smartphones. And for them, this is actually some of the first ways they're actually able to open themselves up to the world as far as accessing music through iPhones and stuff like that. I've actually been to places in Cambodia, Vietnam, and in Africa where people are, they don't have internet access by a computer, don't have computers, but they've got smartphones that they're accessing the internet and getting music from, and living in very poor conditions at the same time. And it's just kind of like this weird mix of how, you know, some of this stuff is now being able to make its way to other countries that aren't just, you know, developed countries with high-speed internet everywhere.
Yeah. I actually got this compilation of some guy who had gone around getting music from people's cell phones in, like, Saudi Arabia or something like that. And the way that they passed MP3s around was from phone to phone, literally connecting the phones to each other. There was no internet connection. Mm-hmm. They would trade MP3s by basically just hooking up their phones to each other.
Wow. Interesting.
Well, it seems like... in terms of that being a function of kind of interconnectedness, that was one thing I was thinking is very crucial about a lot of these streaming services now. Like, not only do they let you have access to this huge catalog of music for, you know, for free or for cheap, it makes you your music collection way more portable, and then you're not bogging your phone down or your computer down with all this music storage space. But a lot of them have this sort of interconnectedness social function where you can share music really easily with the push of a button. So I'm curious what iRadio will do in that department, because they're, what was the thing called? Ping?
Ping, yeah.
Yeah, that did not so well. So I'm curious how Apple will make this fun social experience.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing when you compare Apple and Google is Apple tends to be very closed off, where Google, they basically own the internet, so they're more apt to make something that's more shareable, more open, less restricted in how it's used. So, but you know, I don't know anybody yet who's using Google Play Music All Access.
Right.
I think they could have added a few other words on there. But the next question I have that I think, as we're thinking about these new services, streaming, I know some artists are really frustrated, but and don't necessarily want their music there or see it as a necessary evil because they're seeing less money as opposed to people just downloading or buying CDs. But are these new services actually changing how artists are going to be promoting their music? I mean, it seems kind of weird to be at a show and from stage say, go get our music on Spotify. And that just seems silly. Or,
well, yeah,
we're,
I mean,
on iRadio. Stream us a bunch so we can get $5.
But it might seem silly to us. To a 14-year-old, it might seem second nature. So,
you know what, though? Even if you're talking to an audience of 300 people and they all go home, all 300 go home and listen to your music on Spotify, you're probably going to make less than a dollar. You're going to make like 20 cents if you're lucky.
Yeah.
So I just don't think that makes sense. Like, you've got albums.
It only makes sense.
It only makes sense. Exactly.
There we go.
I think that there are ways that you can market your music on these streaming services, but I think telling your immediate fan base, the people that you've already hooked to go there, it does not make sense.
Yeah. It's. I'd be curious to hear from artists listening if you're finding that those services are useful in promoting, or if you're just always, whenever you're in front of fans, you always send them to a place like CD Baby where you know you're going to make the most money. Or are you hearing from your fans like, oh, I'm streaming you on RDO, I'm streaming you on Spotify? I'd be curious to hear feedback from artists, what they're hearing from their fans as far as how they're engaging with music. Because, you know, the bottom line is what I typically tell artists is that you should have your music everywhere because you don't know where people are going to be listening to music. Whether or not you should send all your fans to those services is another thing. But a lot of these services show up and some of them actually gain, you know, a listenership, you know, like Spotify is obviously not going anyway, going away anytime soon unless, you know, they just don't make money as a business and they have to fold, which is entirely possible. Same with someone like Pandora. They're always complaining that we're going to go out of business if we have to pay the royalty rates you guys want. But then there's some services that launch and don't seem to get a following. But everyone, when they launch, saying, oh, this is a game changer, you know?
Right.
So I'd be curious to hear what people are using. Like, for instance, Twitter Music, it launched and it's actually a very cool tool, in my opinion, that could be useful. I haven't really spent much time with it to see how their rankings evolve. But in my mind, the idea of music that seeing what people are listening to tied into current events going on around the world is intriguing. Whether or not their chart actually reflects that, I don't know. They haven't released a whole lot of information about how they're pulling that, ranking the music.
Right, because they have the Twitter charts thing, where that's basically sort of curating the music to a certain extent based on popularity.
Yeah, and just to hear what people are talking about that seems a little bit more at the moment curated, you know. There were some cool bands that I found just on the unsigned or undiscovered, I think is what it was originally called, section that I'm like, huh, this is good stuff. But,
and
you know,
did you find bands that you had never heard of before? Because that was the problem. I felt like I was really excited about the discoverability aspect of it. And then as they call it surfacing trending tracks. So I was like looking through and I'm like, I've heard of most of these people. So then essentially it's just taking what's already kind of popular and then making it more popular.
Yeah, there were some in there that was like, this isn't undiscovered or surfacing or whatever they were calling it. This artist is on a label, you know.
Right.
Then there were some I hadn't heard of and seemed obscure. I think they need some work to tie it more to Twitter streams. Like, if I click on an artist that's number one, it's Twitter. I want to see the thread of tweets that are causing this thing to be number one.
Yeah.
That seems like an obvious miss. It's an interesting interface. If you haven't tried it, just go to music.twitter.com and check it out. There's also an app on the iTunes store that apparently nobody's downloading anymore because it's like the high 100s as far as the number of the ranking of music apps, which is
pretty low.
Very low. Usually an established company like that can just stay in the top 10 based on their
now,
name.
I want to bring it back a little bit just to what I said before. I said I don't think that you should be marketing to your direct fan base in order to get more listens on these streaming services, but I do think that there are ways to market yourself on these services. And I think that, as you know, like Twitter Music right now, since it's just featuring big artists, there may be some ways of sort of figuring out the service, figuring out who the curators are, the people that have the most influence, reaching out to them, getting some tracks, some play, you know, but that's left to be seen. But on all these music services, I think it's the curation of the music, how people discover the music, and who is influencing, who listens to what, that artists are going to have to start thinking a lot more about. And just in the same way that you know, like when a song or an artist gets featured on like a website like Pitchfork or something like that, then you're going to get this incremental amount. You're going to get tons of listens on these streaming services by new people that haven't discovered your music yet. And that's how you're going to actually make some money from the streaming services. I know that when I listen to Pandora, I'll create a channel and then the same song will keep on coming up over and over again. And even though there's a certain amount of diversity, they introduce new music. There's also the songs that I like or I've thumbed up at some point that gets played over and over again. And I think that if that song's getting played over and over again for me, is it getting played over and over again for millions of people as well? Because it sort of ended up in this slipstream, this curation place. And I think that artists that know how to connect with other influencers online and get their music into those sort of slipstreams will end up making a good amount of money from the streaming services.
Yeah, you mentioned Pandora. I don't think none of the independent projects I've been a part of have seen much traction on Pandora, but with some of the projects, I've been starting to see just some random steady income from things like, you know, the monetization we're doing here at CD Baby from YouTube, just some of the streaming services, and just some other random stuff that it's like, okay, there's a steady stream here. It's not a full-time living by any stretch of the imagination. Right now, I kind of look at it as kind of consistent found money that I kind of depend on. I kind of know in the back of my head that, hey, you know, they'll probably be the X amount of dollars at this time that I can throw into some music stuff or whatever, right. Just to kind of perpetuate things that I'm doing with music. But they seem to be growing, and they're not. I'm not doing anything to affect that.
Right.
And I think over time, I think there will be some things like if you know how to, one, get your music out there to all these places and stoke the fire a little bit, that there might be some income that just happens naturally, but it's not going to be a full-time living, you know? It's not going to, you know, for artists who have a day job but music's their passion and you know, making 10 grand a year is amazing, then I think there's some things that are opening up that will help enable offset some of the loss of downloads. But I'm hopeful, and I'm excited every time I talk about YouTube and see some of the stuff happening there. I think there's huge potential there. And with some of the streaming services, like you're saying, and you get in some playlists by some key people, they get passed around and your track's getting played and people are discovering you. And there's still options.
Speaking of playlists, you can also create your own in terms of, there's a lot of apps that are affiliated with Spotify in a kind of loose way. And TuneWiki, Share My Playlist, SoundDrop, Top 10. You can make your own playlist. You can include your music in playlists that'll get shared a lot. And that's one way to kind of stoke the fires.
You know, I think in terms of SEO, because I do SEO here at CD Baby, but which is search engine optimization.
Yeah, because I was going to say, half the people have no idea what you just said.
Right. But basically, the idea is that in search engine optimization is there's two things that you do. You optimize your website, and then you also go out and try to find other people to help build links and throw traffic over to your website. And I feel like there could be a similar process with promoting your music where you optimize your music. Basically, you know, it could be the metadata. It could be, you could put a couple of cover songs on your album because you know people, and probably not like super well-known cover songs, but maybe some that there's not a ton of people who've covered that song out there. And you might start finding that people are finding you on these services because they're looking for a cover of a certain song, or they're looking for that actual song and they discover you. I think that there's, you're going to see more and more of these sort of little tricks and techniques that people use to get their music sort of into these featured slipstreams on these different services.
Well, I know that, Brian. One thing I was curious if we should mention in terms of all this streaming talk is windowing strategies, which I know last month we were kind of talking about around the office, which is the idea that for a certain window of time after your release, you hold off on making it available on Spotify and RDO and places that are going to pay you a lot less money. And whether that's good or not for indie artists, and my take on it was that you shouldn't do it because, you know, a month or two after your release is probably when the most eyes or most ears are going to be interested in your stuff. And if you don't put it on Spotify, you're cutting out a huge potential fan base. And, you know, it might work for like Adele and Coldplay, who already have millions of fans that want to buy, you know, pay top dollar for, But for someone who's relatively unknown, I think it's kind of shooting yourself in the foot. And one anecdote that proves that, you know, Macklemore, the hip hop artist, he had the number one song in the hip hop charts in iTunes and the number one song on all of Spotify. So it obviously wasn't hurting him.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, for the independent artist, when you have a new release and, you know, like you said, you're not a massive artist with a huge following, it's really tough to do that strategy, because you don't want anyone to go looking for your music and not find it, because the worst thing that can happen is not them streaming on Spotify, but them going to look for you on Spotify, not finding you, then forgetting about you.
Right.
Instead of going there, finding your track, loving what you do, following you on Twitter, checking your Facebook page out, going to your website, looking for tour dates, listening to more, buying some merch, going to iTunes and buying stuff. So that's one thing I would say with artists to be mindful of. The other thing is that as an independent artist, you know, the best thing you can take advantage of is just momentum in general. Is if you have a bunch of fans that are really excited about your new album, and for like 2 months they're really chatting online and doing things that just is helping you spread your story, then you want that to spill over on all the services, because these services all have recommendation engines. They have things that, you know, like reviews. And if you're getting a lot of traction, that means your music will most likely show up in more recommendation engines and get better featured throughout the site. So that's something to consider. It's not going to be maybe a massive deal, but those things do have a life that to this point is never going to end. You know, once your music's online at Spotify, unless you tell them to take it down or they go out of business, your music will be there. And
now, what would you guys say about using bonus tracks as sort of an incentive on the physical product? So you do like a digital release, but you leave off a few tracks just for the buyers of the physical album.
Well, I know that seems to be working in with vinyl, like having special vinyl releases. And it's not a bad idea. I think if you're an artist, then catering to what you're making products knowing that your fans will want more is a way to think about, without, you know, gouging them, but I mean, think about ways that to incentivize them to buy maybe more than they would have normally.
Right. I mean, the danger, I think, with the bonus tracks is, like, what if one of those bonus tracks would have gone viral online? Maybe it's you're like, this song is never going to resonate with people, and then it just happens to be the one that resonates the most. So I guess there's both those things are something to consider.
Well, let's wrap things up here. I really am interested to hear from the artists out there listening. So if you're listening and you have strong feelings about streaming, about what these new services represent in the way of artists making a living from their music, whether it's good or bad, whether you like them or hate them, whether you're an avid user or what, you know, if it's changing the way you're promoting your music, I'd love to hear your feedback, your comments. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209. Leave a message there and we'll try and get it on the podcast. And you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com and we'll include it in the show. And just keep the discussion going. It's interesting to hear feedback from artists out there, because, you know, we sit here at CD Baby and kind of have our opinions and viewpoints, but it's always interesting to hear what's happening out there with artists around the world and their viewpoint as well. So we encourage you to weigh in.
I just realized I'm a hypocrite about two things on this show, because I'm an avid Spotify user, but I also kind of hate it. I mean, I love it I love them, the usability, all that
stuff.
Yeah,
I think you've mentioned that before, where someone said you had a new album and someone's like, oh, I'll just stream it online
or
something.
Yeah,
I'll just go download it from my friend.
Please stream it 1,000 times so I can buy a cookie.
That you're making that much, huh? But anyway, cool. Well, we look forward to your comments, and that'll do it this time.
Until next time,
we'll be back with more.
Peace.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.